Blog Talk Radio.
Man, I hope everybody had a phenomenal weekend. I know that I did. Getting ready for just a wonderful week. I mean, this is Thanksgiving week. Now, I don't know about you guys. I actually, we start November 1st really focusing in on where our plans are for the next year. And looking at things and being thankful for what God's given us this year, being thankful for things that really you can't even put your fingers on sometimes. It's just that those gifts that are given to you from other people, the blessings that are there. And today we're looking at what I think may be one of the pivotal points in Seth Godin's book, Lynchpin. Because this is when we're starting to really get into the meat and potatoes, the down and dirty of what Seth has created. Is it possible to do hard work in a cubicle? Now, I've been blessed beyond measure for the last, I don't know, decade, but especially the last 6 years. I have not had to work in a cubicle. I've not had to work in a defined position. I've been able to be creative. I've been able to use my gifts to give what Seth calls emotional labor. And I believe that's one of the reasons that God has blessed us, you know, this year. I look back over my year, and we're going to combine today with all week long, actually, up until Wednesday. We'll take Thursday and Friday off, but each day I'm going to share some blessings that God has put into our life this year. And three of those blessings are my grandbabies. You know, each year I've watched them grow, and this year he added to us little Ashton to take care of. And I sit here throughout the year, and I look at the emotional investment, the financial investment, the physical, the health, the everything. And I think, man, what a blessing to have this little youngin running around with their two cousins. They're like raising Irish triplets now. And it's like watching them is a blessing. And that takes emotional energy, I tell you. It's, you talk about a labor of love. But listen to this. Labor means difficult. And when I read that, I was sitting there looking at the harbor, and I thought, I remember the labor that Paige went through with all the kids. Although each time she learned a little bit more about her body, she learned a little bit more about being a mama, the labor was just as intensive. And I thought, wow, you know, that's, although Seth doesn't talk about labor in that way in his book, I thought, man, that's just a good analogy to look at. But listen to this. Apparently, we don't have a lot of trouble understanding that work might involve physical labor, heavy lifting, or long periods of fatigue. But for some reason, we hesitate to invest a more important sort of labor into work that really matters. Emotional labor is the task of doing important work, even when it isn't easy. You know, it amazed me. I grew up in a family of union workers. Not just union workers. I ought to correct that. My dad actually was a union executive. He was with the local labor union. He was a union steward. Back in the 60s and the 70s, when Jimmy Hoffa and the Kansas City chapter, the actual local, ran things, there's many a times when my dad's trucking firm would be on strike, and we'd be meeting with some guys under the bridge as they prepared to make sure nobody crossed those picket lines. I saw the labor. I listened as my dad would really get frustrated with the management. It's amazing that I became an executive and have been a freelancer entrepreneur most of my adult life. I didn't want to get wrapped up in the union side of things. And even to this day, in most cases, I see unions as being kind of the breaking bone between what could be communication and what isn't. But I learned a lesson that executives have to put in that emotional energy, and that's something that a lot of times the typical everyday workforce doesn't understand. It's one thing to be trained to do something, one thing. You're trained to do it, and you go out and you do it, but then what happens is you don't really have 40 years experience. You just have 40 years of doing the same exact thing. And if you were taught wrong how to do it, you probably are doing it wrong 40 years later. Usually there's not that emotional love that goes into it. But listen to what Seth writes here. Emotional labor is difficult and easy to avoid. But when we avoid it, we don't do much worth seeking out. Showing up unwilling to do emotional labor is a short-term strategy now, because over time, organizations won't pay extra for someone who merely does the easy stuff. I love my little brother to death, but over the years of listening to him talk as a union electrician, he never talks with passion about his job. He never talks with passion about what he was able to create or accomplish. It's go in, get your paycheck, come home, got laid off, went to the union hall, got on the roster, went back, got a new job, you know. And I look at that and I think, wow. Now, the last couple of years, he's gotten emotionally involved as he went and became an ordained minister. You started to see where his passion was. Folks, if you're listening today, I don't care what company you're with. I don't care what you're doing. If you don't have passion for what you're doing, if there's no emotional love in what you're trying to accomplish right now, I would strongly suggest you seek something deep inside, something strong, something that will help you to understand what and where you're going. See, if all you're living is day in and day out and there's really no passion, do you realize your life was probably going to be cut short? You may not get to see your kids have grandkids. There's an internal mechanism that's dying. You don't want that to happen. Seth goes on and talks about volunteering to do emotional labor. Now, he shares a story in here about airline stewardess, but I want to go a little deeper than that. There's an actor that my wife went to school with by the name of Brad Pitt. You may have heard of him. A lot of people just know Brad for the movies that he makes and all the stuff that he's done in Hollywood. But when Katrina hit, his true passion came out. See, Brad's an architect by trade, not an actor. He has this passion to create what others have not created. So when he saw the devastation from the floods, not the winds, but the floods, he started creating something unbelievable. Started putting together homes that could withstand floods. They weren't the biggest homes out there, but they were great homes. They would help families in some of the worst areas, which is what really got hit, that Ninth Ward and areas like that. He put together his passions and his energy. John Travolta, who we've known from his dancing to his cowboy moves to, you know, talking like a baby and all that stuff. He's a pilot by trade, a commercial pilot. He started flying pharmaceuticals in, donated to help people. I look at Sean Penn, somebody who most of the time I don't agree with in his ideology. Flew into Haiti in January of this year, saw the devastation, and has made a commitment not to leave until those people are taken care of. These are folks that are putting in emotional labor. My own son, Dalton, when he saw what happened during the hurricanes and the floods in 2004 and 2005, instead of worrying about our own home, he started raising funds to be able to go over to Bay St. Louis and help the families there. I watched last year as a young lady had her duplex torched by an arsonist, lose everything in her apartment. Her and her baby got out okay. And he went around raising funds, getting donated material, doing reviews, you know, interviews with the newspaper to raise funds for this young lady. See, when you get down to it, that's the emotional labor. That's when people do things that they're not asked to do. But what about work? What about inside your own organization? Well, listen to what Seth writes here. The opportunity doesn't necessarily feel like an opportunity. Volunteering to do emotional labor, even when you don't feel like it, and especially when you're not paid extra for it, is a difficult choice. My first argument, though, is that you are paid for it. In fact, in most jobs that involve a customer, that's all you're getting paid for. See, one of my greatest passions is helping people. Matter of fact, I sent an email to my partners today. and said, hey, I'm tweaking out a couple of things that I had taken on as responsibilities, and I'm just going to pass them on because they're not allowing me to fulfill that emotional side of the position that I have. See, what happens, and the reason that executives get paid what they get paid, the reason executives have freedoms that they have is because the owners of the company understands it's not about a task. It's about changing people's lives. Do you realize the reason that some of the greatest direct sellers in the world are paid millions of dollars a month, not a year, a month, is not because they were at the right place at the right time. It's because they have put massive emotional energy into creating leaders on their teams. Now, here's the fun part. You hear about a few of their top leaders, and you say, wow, he's successful. Wow, she's successful. Here's what you don't hear about. The emotional energy that they invested in people that decided they didn't want to pass it on and invest emotional energy in somebody else. When you don't invest that emotional labor because you're afraid it won't pay off or it's not worth it, then you not only sell yourself short, but you sell short the people around you. You could have been somebody. God may have created you for something, and yet you decided you weren't going to do that. My Uncle George, my favorite uncle, was that way. I can remember my Uncle George when I was just a preteen, 12, 13 years old. I remember sitting in church one day and hearing him say, God has called me to preach. He has called me to change the world. But yet because of his background, he decided he was not worthy. His pride got in the way. In all the things that he had done, he could rightfully justify most of them. People that he had been in arguments or fights or physical confrontations with. But there was one situation when I was about 8 years old that he could not get over. He had been driving drunk. He had my cousin in the back seat of a car. He had another friend of his in the back seat of a car. And because he had been drinking so heavily, and I could take you to the exact spot today, that over 100 miles an hour decided to take a 90-degree turn. Instead of making the turn on that road, he flipped that car end over end, ejecting the passenger out of the back seat, and the man died on impact. To my uncle, that was an unnecessary death. He could not forgive himself, and because of that, he never fulfilled what his calling was in life. He died with only my mom and his sister and a few family members. His kids did not even show up to his funeral. You have to invest the emotional labor that Seth is talking about here if you want to be a linchpin. Emotional labor is a gift. It's a gift that's given. There was nowhere in what I would call the responsibilities of the position that I have as a senior VP of a computer software company, a marketing firm, that said anything about emotional labor. But as I talked to the founder of that company and he started sharing what he had, what his passions were, it was very easy that the number one responsibility was emotional labor. Seth writes this, when you do emotional labor, you benefit not just the company, not just your boss, but you. The act of giving someone a smile or connecting to a human, of talking initiative, of being surprised, of being creative, of putting on a show. These are the things that we do for free all of our lives. And we get to work, we expect to merely do what we're told and get paid for. See, this is where you can make a difference. This is where the world is becoming different. See, it's not about listening to the media talk about unemployment rates. It's not about somebody saying the economy sucks. See, here's what I have learned over 46 years. When the economy is down, when the stock market is crashing, when the mortgage market blows up, when the internet bubble explodes, those are the greatest opportunities for people who invest in emotional labor. The artists, the creative people, because they're the ones that change the world. Go back and read history. That's all you have to do. That's what makes it different. That's why today you have the opportunity to change your life. You have the opportunity. I don't care if it's in church. I don't care if it's in a business that you have. You may have a dying business in a dying industry. I have a friend of mine. Yeah, for the last, I don't know, decade, has been selling office furniture and succeeding astronomically well with it. Because we're in a booming market down here in the panhandle. Businesses coming in, military flourishing, and all of a sudden he's found his business upside down. Instead of sitting around moping about it, he's out there looking for creative ways to change. If he has to change industries, he'll do that. If not, he's going to find creative ways to sell. See, artists are always out there looking for things, always out there envisioning it in their mind. See, this is the kicker. An artist isn't always just painting. See, art is that creative, passionate, and personal idea that changes a company. It's the tipping point. See, that's what makes the biggest difference. How many of you heard of Jonathan Ives? Does anybody know who Jonathan Ive is? I-V-E? Do you know who he is? He's the actual designer of the iPod. Oh, sure, Apple and Steve Jobs gets the credit, but do you realize somebody has to start the dream? Somebody has to start the creativity. Somebody was given the responsibility of come up with something so creatively different that even though we're the latest bloomer in the doggone MP3 world, that we can do it. And you know what he did? He combined everything, the Walkman, the MP3 player, the boombox. It all came into one, and the rest is history. See, guys, this is what it takes. This is why I get so passionate about doing radio shows. I don't get anything out of these radio shows except my own self-learning. But here's what happens. When I get an email from somebody, when I get a text from somebody, when I get a message on Facebook from somebody, and they said, Troy, I've listened to that over and over and over. Thank you for sharing that. The way you explained it was easier for me than just reading it. Thank you for giving me those words. I get it. See, art is a personal gift that changes the recipient. I have people in my life, they're not close, but they're in my life, who still go by that old adage, what's in it for me? They still believe that the world's running around here asking what's in it for me. The only people that are going running around there asking what's in it for me are those people with a poverty mindset. I have a shirt that I wear on a lot of videos that say poverty sucks. See, poverty is not about being broke financially. Poverty is what happens when you don't have or you're not willing to give emotional labor like Seth is talking about here. See, when you're always looking, what's in it for me, then you're not out there saying, what can I do to help others? What's in it for them? What can I do where there's no strings attached? That's one of the reasons I love this holiday. My wife gets frustrated at me. Her birthday's today. I got to do a shout out to Paige. We've been together half of our life, not half of our adult life, but half of our life. And today, she's a year older, a year more beautiful, a year wiser. She's put up with my antics for another year. She's somebody who I've been able to look at as one of my heroes because she's always given to others. Most of the time it's children. She has a passion for kids to protect and to keep them whole. So when she sees a child, whether it's one of our own or somebody else's, she goes out and tries to help. She's a giver. Folks, that's how we've got to be. We've got to be givers. See, if you want to get, then you got to give. It's not, you don't get by asking for a handout. It just doesn't happen that way. Seth writes this: the artist is an individual who creates art. The more people you change, the more you change the more people you change, the more you change them, the more effective your art is. See, the more that you give to people, the more people that are changed, the more that they go out and change others, and you start that duplicating process, the more your world changes. That's why you see folks that are out there that have changed the world. You wonder, you hear people with a poverty mindset, politicians, newscasters, I don't care who they are. It's not that they're not making 6-7 figures a year. It's that they expect to earn that. A lot of athletes, sadly, these days are that way. But the greatest athletes in history were givers. They gave to others. They trained others. They worked with others. They motivated others. And they won because they created teams of people that were the same way. Have you ever wondered what the difference is between a cook at a fast food restaurant and a chef at a 5-star restaurant? See, cooks don't change anything. Cooks do what they told. They read the manual from the big office, from the Hamburger University. But a chef creates in his mind. He sees the recipe and says, I can do it better. She sees the artistic ability of putting different colors of food together on a plate or in a cake or whatever the case is. See, this is the difference. Seth calls it the art of interaction. Being able to create in a mind-boggling way. Being able to do what others say that can't be done. Malcolm Gladwell calls it the tipping point. Tim Sanders calls it love. I don't care what you call it. If you're a giver, if you go out there and say, how can I make things different? How can I help the company? How can I help my team? How can I help my family? How can I help my church? How can I help myself by living healthy? I don't care what it is. You can change the world. See, I'm not real big on this global warming and all this green stuff. But here's what it's done for me. It's made me realize I'm a steward of what God has given me. So you know what? We're doing a little bit more recycling. We're looking at a little better way of living. I don't understand all this other stuff. It's way beyond my pay grade, and it just doesn't matter to me. But I'm going to do my little part. Try to show my family, hey, let's pick up our trash. Let's throw some things away. Let's look for some. See, when you're a giver, you want to change. When other people are givers, you start to buy into that and you say, wow. One of the reasons I'm with the company that I am is because it's a company that creates hope and opportunity for people. It's the reason I'm in the church that I am. I just got this big thing about hope and opportunity. I'm not one of those fire and brimstone type of people. So I believe you can find positive in everything. See, you got to surround yourself with people like that. Seth says that sometimes we like to sell ourselves short. He says, a day's work for a day's pay. He goes, I hate this approach in life. It cheapens us. The simple formula bothers me for two reasons. Man, these are passionate words of wisdom. Listen to this. Number one, are you willing to sell yourself out so cheap? Do you mortgage an entire irreplaceable day in your life for a few bucks? The moment you're willing to sell your time for money is the moment you cease to be an artist that you're capable of being. Think about that. You know, we've been talking about factories, but I'm gonna bring this home to one of my social causes, and it's in the sex trade. There's factories out there where all these people do is get young ladies, young girls, young boys, and sell them for a few measly acts, but yet it devastates the psyche of the people, and the people there become just what Seth is talking about here, just sold out empty souls, thinking they're no good for anything. The only difference between somebody that's in the sex trafficking world and you is that you have the opportunity to get out without losing your life. You still have the opportunity to make a change without a lot of help from somebody else. Yeah, you may think that your world is just a round and around type thing and all you're doing is a groundhog day, but I'm telling you what, you still have an opportunity to change. Out of fear and manipulation, there's a lot of people in this world that don't. You need to give that some thought. The second thing that Seth hates about it is selling ourselves short, is that it becomes a transaction. And when the transaction's over, so are you. You're just done. Most of the time, we're not even at the end of the transaction. And if we're even then, there's no bond, no ongoing connection between us and the factory. We see the downsizing, we see the layoffs, we see shipping stuff overseas. See, if you want to be irreplaceable, if you want to be a linchpin, then you have to put the emotional labor in. I talked about this in the Marine Corps, where people would tell us, don't, whatever you do, don't sit there and volunteer for anything. Just be quiet. That's a bunch of cockamamie crap. I don't care if it's your work. I don't care if you're in the downline. You better be coming up with creative ideas. And you may be saying, Troy, my upline says don't reinvent the wheel. Emulate what I do. That's great. Emulate it and create something better. The whole thing about duplication and direct sales, I want to set the myth straight. I'm going to tell you what it is right now. Perfect duplication inside of a system has nothing to do with the process. It has to do with creating leaders. And if you're not creating leaders, if your upline, I don't care how much money they make or what rank they're at, if they're not out there duplicating their efforts and creating new leaders, and those new leaders want to break outside the box and go do it better than them, then they are not doing duplication the way it's supposed to be done. They are not a linchpin. They're a self-serving factory. And you don't want to be that way. I don't expect you to go back and tell your upline, Troy was talking about you today. That's not my point. My point is you can start a whole new process. You can break this curse of being in the factory. This is what Seth writes. This is great. Listen. Wait. Are you saying that I have to stop following instructions and start being an artist? Someone who dreams up new ideas and makes them real? Someone who finds new ways to interact, new pathways to deliver emotion, new ways to connect? Someone who acts like a human, not a cog? Yes. If you get nothing else out of the show today, get out of the poverty mindset. Get out there and become a winner. Get out there and become a great, passionate leader. I can't cover everything in this chapter in 30 minutes. It takes me 2 hours to read one because I'm mulling it over and going through it. But when it gets right down to it, you can make a big difference in your life. It's not just about a job. It's about creating art. The job might be difficult. It might require skills, but it's still a job. You can't be a plastic surgeon, not everybody, but listen to this. Your art is what you do when no one can tell you exactly how to do it. It's when you know inside exactly what's supposed to be done and you know what it's going to look like because you can see it. Your art is the act of taking personal responsibility, challenging the status quo, and changing people. My only purpose in life is to challenge the status quo and help change people. That's what I like to do. That's what I do day in and day out. It's what I love to do. The only thing that's holding you back right now is fear. The fear of being laughed at. The fear of standing out. The fear of the unknown. That's all that's holding you back. You're wrapped up in this coulda, woulda, shoulda, I didn't mindset. It's a poverty mindset, no matter what anybody tells you. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the resistance. We're going to talk about how you can start shaping yourself, how you can start turning, just a little bit at a time, you can turn that rudder to where by the December 31st of 2010, you will have turned your ship around. You will have gone from just being a cog to a linchpin. You can make a difference. Folks, live life like it's an epic adventure. Have a fantastic day, and be back here tomorrow with me for Radio for Your Mind. Bye now.